Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, listeners. I want to thank our good friends at Slipped Disc for their enthusiastic support of Speaking Soundly. Be sure to check out SlippedDisc.com for the latest inside information on classical music now. Oh, and while you're here, could you do me a favor? If you like this show, follow it. It's pretty simple, really, and it's free. Just click the follow button on whatever podcast app you're listening to right now. And if you already follow the show, click the share podcast button and send Speaking Soundly to your friends and relatives that also like listening to candid and inspiring conversations with some of the best musicians on the planet. All right, so thanks again for the continued support. We really appreciate it. American singer and actress Mandy Gonzalez has graced Broadway with her powerful voice and fearless stage presence. She's best known for her notable roles like Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton and the iconic green witch Elphaba in Wicked. But originating the character Nina from Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights would prove to be her most personal and groundbreaking role.
It was the first piece I had been in where it's an all-Latino cast. That was unheard of. To be in a show based on a Latino family that everybody could relate to. There was nothing like that experience.
You're listening to Speaking Soundly, a backstage pass to today's biggest stars of the music world. I'm your host, David Krause, principal trumpet of the Metropolitan Opera. During each episode, you'll hear me speak with inspiring performers about their creative process and the personal journey that led them to the stage. Since I'm talking to an actual Schuyler sister from Hamilton, I have to confess, I had a chance to see Hamilton in previews because my wife sent me down to Times Square. We had the night off to see a show. She was like, go down to Times Square, see what new shows are out. And I'm looking at the shows and there's this new show called Hamilton. And I asked what it was about. And the guy said, well, it's like this new rap musical about the founding fathers. It's about 3 hours. And I said, no, thanks. And I walked away.
So it wasn't smart. So,
yeah, it's good to finally get that off my chest.
Yeah, I'm glad that you could talk to me about it because I can't imagine how you must have felt.
Yeah. My family doesn't let me forget that.
Oh, God.
But you're in that show for 6 years.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was actually 4.5 because we were down from the pandemic for 1.5 years. But I think I counted it. It was like 1,400 shows or like a little bit more than that.
That's a lot of shows.
Yes.
Night after night, you're giving your all. Where do you find the energy? And does the repetition of it ever get to you?
I absolutely love what I do. And when you're in a show like Hamilton, where, you know, I've been in shows before that don't make it. So there's a big difference when you're in a show like Hamilton and everybody wants to be there and everybody has been waiting for years to see the show. They maybe got tickets for a Christmas gift or, you know, a birthday. And so there's this energy in the theater for a show like this. And right when the lights go down, people start applauding. For an actor, there's nothing like that. It's so exciting. And so I think that's how I get through the 8 shows a week. It's not easy, but it's my job. And it's those are the things that I find that are so exciting. And the thing about repetition is you're always finding something new within the characters. And I think if you can find a joy in that and fun, then you should continue doing it. If you feel, you know, jaded or like, why am I doing this? Then go do something else. You know, I have always absolutely loved what I do.
But 1,400 times.
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot. And the other thing is that you're in a company of people, most of whom have been doing it longer than you, and you're all making it look like opening night every night.
Absolutely.
Are there things that are obvious to you that the audience would never pick up on? Like, what is the audience not seeing that you clearly are?
The sign-up list. Once you're in a long-running show and it's a hit, I've been in a couple now with Wicked and Hamilton. It's never the same show because the cast is always different. Somebody's sick, somebody's on vacation, you know, somebody's making their Broadway debut for the first time. So there's always this excitement. And that's definitely something that the audience doesn't see unless it's a main character. And then they can see who's in the show that day with their program. Like they get these little slips that say this person's out today. And
right.
But it's that joy of like, who am I on with today and what are they going to bring?
So I play trumpet in an orchestra for a living, which means I'm always in front of music. I almost never have to memorize what I'm playing. You don't get that luxury.
No.
Everything you do has to be memorized. Every note you sing, every move that you make. Can the muscle memory needed to perform on stage like that get in the way of your creative impulse, or can it work in tandem somehow?
Gosh, it depends. You know, I think that they definitely, you hope they work in tandem and you hope that you can be perfect and everything goes great. But we all know we're human and things can go awry. And if you're in a show like Hamilton, that you kind of get on this train and it just keeps going, you can't stop. And so if there is a mess up, everybody knows. You kind of, we call it like the white room that you get into where you're just kind of lost, and then all of a sudden you'll get back on beat. And that's a horrible feeling because you feel like, well, oh my gosh, I messed up, and is that going to happen next time? You can't psych yourself out. You got to go, okay, I'm human and this happened this night and tomorrow it's going to be better. And that's the joy of theater. And, you know, yay for live music, right?
Yeah, right.
Yep.
In those moments, that white room where everything just kind of stops.
Yeah.
Does time truly stand still? Because a lot of times you're actually doing stuff as that's happening.
Totally.
So what is that moment like?
It's awful.
Yeah.
In that moment, it feels like, I don't know, it feels like, oh, was that 20 minutes? Did 20 minutes go by? And somebody say, no, it was 30 seconds. And then you got back on it.
Well, as terrifying as that sounds, I bet it was nothing compared to the experience of replacing a main character in a show like Hamilton. I mean, yeah. The show's already running, so you don't get a full rehearsal process like everybody else, right?
I've replaced in a show before. I've replaced in Wicked. And that experience, you just get to rehearse with the stage manager and the dance captain. And then your first introduction to the cast is put in rehearsal. And a put in rehearsal is when you're in your costume, everybody else is in street clothes, and you get to perform with the cast. And then the next day you start your performances.
So time out. You're the only one in costume. Everybody else is in street clothes.
Yes.
I've had nightmares like that.
Yes, that's called a put-in rehearsal. And especially as Elphaba and Wicked, you're the only one. You're the only one that's green at all, but you're the only one in this world that's, you know, Oz.
Is that just surreal?
It's so surreal. And it's so nerve-wracking because you want so many things. You want it to go well. You want the other actors to feel, like, comfortable with you. They're used to doing it with other people. You don't want to, you know, rock the boat too much, but you want to bring your own interpretation of the role. So there's a lot of those kind of feelings. And I think with being a part of Hamilton and being able to rehearse with the Chicago company, I really got to have a rehearsal process. But I felt really lucky that I felt very confident in the interpretation that I was bringing to this character that was so loved.
And then the development
of In the Heights.
Yes.
Having started that from the original cast, being in that room when that happened, my daughter said, please don't make any stupid dad jokes about being in the room when it happened.
But I love it. I mean, but that's why that lyric is so, everybody relates to it, because everybody wants to be in the room where it happens, you know?
Right.
When I started with In the Heights, I was invited to go and meet Lin-Manuel Miranda, Tommy Cale, and Alex Lacamoire, and they hired me to do the reading. And the first day, we opened the books, and Lin said, I know you guys don't know any of the songs, so I'm just going to sing everything. And he started, and it was Lights Up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day, and Alex just started playing. We were just like, who is this guy? This is amazing. And how can we be a part of this forever?
From the first note.
It wasn't just the first note. It was his energy. It was this energy of yes, you know, this confidence and the things that he was singing. And it just was like nothing I had ever heard on Broadway. So I was asked to go with them when they turned it into workshop. And then I was asked to go when they went off Broadway, and then asked to go to Broadway. And then running up at the Tony Awards at Radio City, like to get Best Musical altogether. You know, it was the first piece I had been in where it's an all Latino cast. That was unheard of, you know. Usually it's one of us that's hired in a show, and it's like, okay, we hired one, so we're good. And to be in a show where it's like, oh, these people understand where I come from and my family, and we were telling a story that is based on a Latino family that everybody could relate to, there was nothing there, and there still will be nothing like that experience.
It sounds like In the Heights was very near and dear to your heart, but Washington Heights is a world away from where you grew up in Santa Clarita, California. Mm-hmm. Did you have a hard time relating at all to that character that embodied Washington Heights?
No, I don't think I had that at all. You know, my family was working class. My father grew up migrating across the United States as a farm worker. And so I knew what it meant to fight for things and to want a better life for the people coming after you. And I felt that the character Nina Rosario was very much a reflection of that first generation Latino that everybody puts their dreams into and wants more. And I wanted more, but not just for myself, but for my family. I always felt a responsibility to make them proud. And that's why it was universal, because that story can happen in Washington Heights, and that story can happen where I'm from, you know, in a small town in California, as long as you know what it is to belong to a community.
So your father is Mexican. Your mm-hmm. mother is Jewish by way of Poland.
Yes, yeah? And Romania.
What an amazing combination. I bet you grew up with the best food.
Absolutely.
How did your parents meet?
My parents met as pen pals during the war. So my father was drafted to the Vietnam War, and my mom wanted to join the Peace Corps. And my mom is from like the Valley in California. And her parents were like, no. So she did this other thing, which was write to soldiers that maybe didn't have anybody to write to. And one of those soldiers was my father. And I didn't know about this story until I was a little bit older and I found all these letters in the closet. And my mom was like, yeah, these are letters and this is what happened, but nobody should ever read the letters. They're private. And, you know, I'm like, I was a nosy kid and I still am very nosy. So I read all of the letters, and in one of the letters, my father, he didn't know what it meant to be Jewish and what that means, because my mom said, well, this is what I am and this is where my background is from. And so in the letters, she kind of has to explain to him like what that means and what that's about. And but when he came back from the war, he didn't have much, but he had a car and a sense of direction, and he showed up on her doorstep, and the rest is history. And they just
history. That's a musical.
Yeah, right.
It kind of writes itself.
Yeah, so they just, you know, I had a very American life, which is I had a bubby and an abuelita. And I'm so glad that I did, because I learned a lot from a young age about tolerance. And I think some people don't know or don't think about that until, you know, they're older.
Did you grow up in a particularly musical household?
I did. You know, my father used to sing in a band when he was young. And so there was a lot of music around the house. My mom loved the Beatles. But they both worked full time. And so I spent a lot of time with my bubby, and she loved musicals. And I was the only grandchild that would sing back with her. And so she was like, wow, what are we going to do? Like, this kid has talent. So she didn't know what to do. You know, I don't come from that world. And so there was a dinner theater down the street from my house where you could see a show and get a meal. And she took me to that dinner theater. And then she went and talked to the actors afterwards and asked them how I could get lessons. And it's because of her that my life in this crazy business began.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You'd go on to pursue a music ed degree at yes. California State University. Mm-hmm. Did you want to become a music teacher? Was that a fallback of sorts in case this Broadway career didn't work out?
No, I think I wanted to just go to college. I think that it was a college that wasn't too far from my family, CalArts, and it had a really good theater program. And that's what all of my peers that were interested in that world were doing. And so that's when I was like, well, I have to do that too. And then I went for a year and then I auditioned to be a backup singer for Bette Midler at a random open call. And I got that job and away from school I went.
I want to ask you about that because I have a daughter. She's in college as an actress now, but she went to LaGuardia Performing Arts here in New York City. And, yeah. and she, like musical theater and dance and singing is her life. And I take her to these rehearsal studios on 54th Street mm-hmm. for auditions and lessons and things like that. And there mm-hmm. would be, you'd get out of the elevator and there's just rooms teeming with dancers and singers and actors all auditioning for like one role.
Right.
She was undeterred by these cattle calls.
Because she loves it.
Yeah, but as her father.
Oh, yeah.
It was really hard to witness. Was it difficult for your parents who were a coast away to watch you enter this lion's den of a profession?
You know what? I have never asked them. I think when I moved to New York away from them, that's when it was like, well, I don't know if this is, you know, the right thing for you. I'm worried and all these kind of things. And I said, don't worry about it. It'll just be a year. And it's been over 22 years that I have lived in New York and I've been a working actor. So my father just always wanted me to work yeah. and make a living and get health insurance and all those kind of practical things. But, you know, I didn't think about that when I was starting. And but I think I just wanted it so much. Whether or not anybody was deterring or worried or any of those things, it was like I just had this bullet idea.
Well, when you were 19 and you got that Bette Midler's show as a backup singer,
yeah.
you're touring the country, you're staying in swanky hotels, you're playing stadiums like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Did you think at 19 years old you had reached the pinnacle of your profession, or was there a part of you that wanted to be the headliner, something bigger?
You know, I'll tell you, David, it's very interesting because at the end of every show, the backup singers would stand in the back and sing her last number. And as I'm singing this, I could see Bette, you know, standing on the stage. And I just thought, that's where I want to be. And it was just something in my brain that just said, like, I want to be in the front. I don't know if I've always felt that way, but in that moment, that was like, oh, okay, this is just the beginning for me.
You would, at some point, garnered the nickname The Beast because of your vocal strength. Were you born with this power, or was it something that you cultivated and learned?
It's definitely something that I learned along the way. I think I was born with a gift, and I was born to express myself through music, and it's something that I feel so lucky to have because it's an expression of everything of who I am. But I used to sing a lot with my grandmother, and we used to sing a lot of like Judy Garland songs and things like that. And so that's where I started to develop this sound that's called the belt. But it would kind of tire me out, you know, doing that all the time. And it wasn't until I think I was about 10 years old when I was introduced to Tina Turner's music. And then I started to sing with her, and I started to delve into like Aretha Franklin and Whitney Houston, and I wanted to sound like them. And so I started to find this place between the belt and my head voice that was like a mix between the two, which helps me do 8 shows a week where I can stay healthy and that kind of thing. But it was those singers, those women that taught me how to sing, like unbeknownst to them.
So after being on tour, you moved to New York City, mm-hmm. and you were, of all things, a coat check girl while you took auditions and dreamt of a life on Broadway. I mean, could your life at that point have been any more cliche?
I know. I had because as a lot of kids, they have to pay their own way. You know, my parents, they worked hard, but they didn't have the extra money for me to support me out in my dreams. And so I had to provide my own rent and my own groceries and all that kind of stuff. And so I worked at Dean and DeLuca bagging groceries.
Did you enjoy the hustle of it all? Or was it?
I love the hustle.
Yeah. It wasn't precarious for you.
No, I mean, there was that moment where I would break down and be like, it's never going to happen. And then I would cry and then I would pick myself up and keep going. But that's the life of an artist, of an actor.
Yeah. Well, it picked up and you were in a show called Eli's Coming. You win an award for that. You gain the attention of the Disney people. They put you in Wicked. I mean, I'm oversimplifying this, but you finally land your first original show called Dance of the Vampires, and the reviews come in, and while they say the performers are great, the show falls short. Mm-hmm. One of the reviews said, you'll enjoy it if you bring low expectations and earplugs. That must have been devastating.
Oh, God. People were so, so cruel because they think, for some reason, that you're in this show that it's your fault. That it didn't work, or it's your fault that this didn't happen. And, you know, it wasn't. It was just what happens sometimes. Sometimes shows make it, sometimes they don't. But the work is the same, and the people that are putting it together are the same. And I learned so much about myself. I learned how strong I am and how much, because I had somebody come up to me and say, well, you're probably going to, you know, throw in the towel and like go back home and, you know, after this. And I was like, why? What do you mean? And she's like, well, you know, it's just really hard, you know, all these things. And I said, well, I'm going to let John Simon from New York Magazine determine my career. Like, F you. My family worked a lot harder to be part of this country, and I can work just as hard being part of Broadway. So I wasn't going to let the culture at that time or what people thought a leading lady should look like, because I didn't look like anybody that was on the stage before. The only people that I had had in my past to look at and to admire were people like Priscilla Lopez and Chita Rivera and Daphne Rubin Vega. And, you know, when I had people write, like, she's not the girl next door, it was like, what does that mean? I am the girl next door. And in today's culture, we would talk about those things and they wouldn't even write that, or they'd have to put an apology up. But people talked about my looks and all those kind of things from that. And I think as a 24-year-old, that was a really hard thing to, and as a woman, it was a really hard thing to go through, but I made it. And I became a bigger advocate, I think, for myself. And I put my worth in so much more than just what a show would do, you know? And I think it also brought up a lot of like things that I thought about myself, you know, from being a part of two cultures, like never feeling like I belonged, having Jewish relatives say, oh, you don't look Mexican. And then you would have a Mexican relative say like, oh, you don't look Jewish. And it's like, what does that mean? It brought up all these thoughts about myself, right, and that I hadn't dealt with before. But then there's a reason everything happens, because I had to deal with it head on and kind of go, this is me, and just keep going.
Well, you've been a part of it for a long time now, and you obviously love it, and people love to watch you on stage. What is it about performing that really speaks to you?
I think it's human nature to want to express yourself. And I think that we all got to see a little bit of what we were missing during the pandemic, when we had those moments at our house where somebody was doing a concert online and we could all tune in, and that would lift us up. Music and art has been lifting us up throughout our lifetime. And I think that life without the arts is just not life.
Well, you've continued this good work by forming your Fearless Squad.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about that? It sounds like the next Marvel movie coming out. What exactly is it?
Well, that would be great. It is, you know, I had a lot of young people writing to me at the theater about feelings of loneliness, feelings that they didn't belong. And I felt like if people didn't have a place to be, I've been so lucky in my life, you can be part of my hashtag fearless squad. And I put it out there. And I said, who's with me? And I had no idea that hundreds of thousands of people would want to be a part of it. So I came up with squad rules, and anybody can be a part of the fearless squad. You just have to follow the rules. And it's, I held your hand in mine, and together we change the world, and we help each other when we fall. We embrace differences. We look for the good, and we dream big, and together we're fearless. And that's how it started for me. And it has connected me with people all over the world. You know, Malala's a part of the Fearless Squad. People that I would never have met and admire that are doing such wonderful things in our world to inspire me as a parent, you know, and as a person.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, David.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Speaking Soundly. In the coming weeks, we'll be sharing some of our favorite episodes from the first season while we work on new interviews with Grammy Award winners Bela Fleck, Janae Bridges, Barbara Hannigan, and so many more. To keep up with the show, follow us on Instagram at SpeakingSNDLY and visit our website, artfulnarrativesmedia.com. Tune in next week as we hear another inspiring artist speaking soundly.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.